All right. Our report by our State Board Liaison. Mr. Wolf. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just thanks to you folks who were here for those items. We appreciate your working together with staff on those. Don't go away mad. Mr. Wolf, thank you.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be here in person rather than through the telephone as last month, although I appreciate the accommodation going through the telephone. It was scheduling has been difficult lately. As usual, I'll report on a few items that I think might be of interest to you, but it's a little bit of guesswork on my part, and I'll be glad to answer any questions on anything that is of interest to you that I haven't covered. The first point is a little impromptu, but it was prompted by the award that was given for Mary for running the CCAMP program. One of the first things I got asked to intervene in when I joined the State Board last June was the union negotiations with the scientists, and I dutifully said, I support higher wages and better pay, et cetera, but I'm not going to get involved. I mean, you've got to be kidding. This is a, you know, a meat grinder. I'm walking into Sacramento. I can't get involved in that. But what I did do was I went and talked to the head of our administrative group, Esteban, who informed me that there is a performance reward system, as you just gave an award, and there is an award system for sustained superior accomplishment and also for superior accomplishment. And each award can be accompanied by up to a $500 check. And it turns out there's an unlimited capacity until we run out of money. There's an unlimited capacity in that program to give awards. And they were already beginning to think about, you know, giving more awards away. The program had been underutilized for many years, and they were already beginning to think about that. So I said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. Morale is suffering. Let's give away more awards. I don't know that my words had anything to do with the award that was given here. Probably not. But I have initiated 4 awards myself as a board member, 3 for staff of the State Water Board, and 1 for a member of the North Coast Water Board who I was impressed with. And those awards have all been given. And so you, as board members, also have the ability to do that. You can initiate awards, and I suggest you do that if there are people on the staff who really stand out in your mind. This is a good way to send the signal to people that this is what we mean by superior accomplishment and excellent work. The second point I wanted to raise is I noticed your item 15 is on low-impact development, and I'll be very interested to hear that discussion. This is something I'm very interested in myself. I was on the Stormwater Committee while serving as a member of the San Francisco Bay Regional Board, and we also held a hydro modification workshop at the Santa Clara Valley Water District maybe 3 months ago. I am working to get that group, the Watershed Management Initiative group, from Santa Clara Valley before the Water Quality Coordinating Committee at one of our next meetings, because I thought their 30-minute presentation was very succinct and covered all of the issues, and they have a wide range of stakeholders, and it's an important topic for the state. I'm glad to see the Central Coast region giving it a lot of attention, and I look forward to hearing that item. A couple things going on at the State Board that are related to that are I initiated a white paper through our research coordinator who was hired, the first research coordinator ever for the State Board, who was hired on February 1st, and I initiated a white paper that he is working on the topic of property value and low impact development techniques. And the idea is, and EPA put out a paper on this about 8 years ago, which anecdotally showed that when you have certain types of features in neighborhoods, grass lines, swales, and retention ponds, as long as they're designed in the right way, and other sorts of things, these improve the aesthetics of the neighborhood, and they increase property value. Now, of course, if you have a retention pond and it's steep and kids can fall into it and get hurt, drown or whatever, there's fear of that. That can reduce property values. So one has to be careful. But there is some evidence that the techniques done right can increase property values. And I was intrigued by that notion because obviously, given the funding issues that municipalities face, that you hear about every time you probably adopt a SWIP under the MS4, the Phase 2 MS4 permit. If there's a way that these techniques can increase property values, that's going to help the bottom line for local communities. So we have a white paper underway to investigate that, to see what data is available on that front and whether we can substantiate in a credible way, you know, that connection. And if we can identify in more detail what types of LID techniques enhance property values and what types don't. Another issue that is related to low-impact development is our general construction stormwater permit. There is a draft out on the street. I chaired workshops on the 17th and 20th of April on that topic, one in Southern California and one in Sacramento. The closing deadline for comments was just Friday, and I have a stack about this high of comments that that were received. So I'll be plowing through those, and we'll be figuring out where to go next. I can't discuss the substance of the permit with you. It's an ex parte rule issue, as you're familiar with the permits that are before you. You can't discuss them. But the process is fair game, and the process is something like the following. We put out a draft. We're getting comments. We'll move from the draft either to another draft, if we think we need yet another draft because the significant changes are being made, or we'll move to a tentative order. Once we move to a tentative order, we actually have a proposed action before us. The staff is recommending something. The draft that is out now is not a recommended permit. It's a draft permit, a concept for discussion. So we'll see whether we get to the tentative order next or whether we feel like we need to go through another draft next. That depends on the comments received and how we choose to respond to them. We do expect one way or the other, though, that a final order will be adopted before the year is out. So there will be a new general construction permit, I think, before the year is out. And the old permit was issued in 1999, so we're in year 8 of a 5-year permit. So I'm sure you can understand our desire to get that thing reissued. It does address the issue of hydro modification with some overlap with other permits, and so that's an issue that's important for us to address and to coordinate with the other permits. Another topic that may be of interest to you is the strategic planning process, and I apologize, I won't be here next month. I will be in Australia looking at stormwater facilities on vacation time. Actually, I have some Australian colleagues who invited me over. But the taxpayer's not paying for the trip. I'm going, and then I'm going to look at some stormwater facilities the very week of your meeting. So I'm sorry I won't be here. But when you hold the meeting, one of the topics that will come up will be this issue of appropriate and inappropriate consistencies between regional boards. And as a San Francisco Bay Board member, I was simply not aware of the different ways that things get done in different regions, how different they are sometimes, and the lack of transparency to the public as to why they're different. This is not to say the differences are bad. The differences may, in fact, be good, or the differences may be bad. We have to sort that out. But there are substantial differences that most people working in a region aren't aware of. And to give you a couple of concrete examples that I've become aware of as a member of the State Board, compliance schedules, for example. Compliance schedules for NPDES permits under the Clean Water Act. 6 regions authorize them in their basin plans. The authorization language is a little bit different in each case. The rules for getting them are a little bit different. 3 regions don't even offer them. So there's differences, significant differences across the state. The environmental community has argued that compliance schedules under the Clean Water Act are flat out illegal, and that's being litigated. EPA has said, no, they're legal as long as they're authorized under the governing legislative act, which in our case is a basin plan. But if the basin plans all have different rules, then people who are working within the system and have permits in multiple regions, which could be a business or could be a county, which straddles 2 regions, it's a little difficult for them to operate when there are different rules for compliance schedules. So we initiated a statewide compliance schedule policy, which is in process in-house, to try to resolve these inconsistencies in a productive way. But that's an example of an inconsistency. You can see how that would be frustrating to people, where it's not clear why the rules are different and whether the differences are justified or not. They just are different, and we need to sort that out. Another example would be in the area of non-point source regulation and the waivers that are issued for various things around the state. Or actually, I shouldn't even say waivers. There are different mechanisms used for non-point source waters and pollution. And I had the staff put a table together, which will be coming to all the regions in not too long. And the table runs onto 3 pages. Every row is a type of pollutant, and every column, 9 columns, is a different region. And there's a coding system, color coding and X's and O's and stuff, that show the different mechanisms being used in the different regions to deal with something like grazing or suction dredging or, go down the line. I mean, there's I can't even remember all the rows. There are all these different ways in which we can regulate non-point source regulation, non-point source pollution under our 2004 non-point source policy, and they're dramatically different across regions and across types of pollutants. And no one had put the table together before. I asked the staff if it was worth doing, and they thought it was, and they did it, and so I went over with them a couple weeks ago. And it'll be sent out to the regions under a memo saying, there are these differences. You may not be fully aware of them. To the extent that there are these differences, can you tell us why and whether you think they should continue, or do you think we should try to converge in some way on some of these? You know, it's not a matter of inconsistency being bad or good in and of itself. It's a matter of inconsistency being appropriate or inappropriate. And we need to be able to explain to the public and the regulated community why those differences exist when we think they should exist. And so I expect you'll have some people coming to your strategic planning meeting talking about that issue. And those are examples of, you know, the types of things that are bothering people and that we need to have a good, clear answer to, I think, as a board system. And the final area I wanted to mention is recycled water. I've been out on a speaking tour in the last week on recycled water. I gave a presentation at the California Association of Sanitation Agencies on Friday. I did another one for the Aqua Recycled Water Subcommittee on Tuesday. I was on a liability panel, the liability issues associated with recycled water on Wednesday. And then yesterday I talked to the California Urban Water Agency's board, I think it was. It was the general managers of the largest 10 to 12 water agencies in the state, which comprise CUA, California Urban Water Agencies, and I talked to them about recycled water. And the reason I'm doing that is that there are significant differences in the way the regions regulate recycled water, and it's not clear why those differences exist. And recycled water is imperative from a water supply perspective. And at the regional level, we mostly don't do water supply. We do water quality. I mean, Roger's joke was right on point. And so the water supply people are quite upset with the water board system because they feel as if recycled water is being hindered by the water board system. Maybe not in this region. I haven't heard any horror stories out of this region, but so-called horror stories. But in other regions, people are quite upset because they feel recycled water is being hindered. And there aren't a clear set of rules. So I've been out talking to people about that and getting feedback and learning the differences between the regions. And I'd be happy to talk with you more about that. But it's another area where there's an overriding state interest in promoting recycled water. The legislators stated that in 1976 when they enacted law in this area, Division 7, Chapter 7 of the Water Code, which directed DHS to create rules and for us to implement those rules, to issue water reclamation requirements, which we do. And so this overriding interest has been stated numerous times, and yet we still don't have a clear pathway to facilitate recycled water development around the state. People are hung up over salts. People are hung up over emerging contaminants. Projects are being held back for a variety of reasons that we need to sort through a little more effectively, I think. So with that, I'm glad to answer any questions you might have. Please.
Gary, thanks very much for coming and for your updates. It's a related point. It seems that the State Senate may be wanting to move faster on the issue of convergence and transparency with the Parada bill. Could you give us an update on the status of that bill and maybe a sense of how the State Board... It seems clear that the State Board Chair wrote a letter quite critical of that bill. Is anybody listening?
Yeah, I think they're listening. I can't say that from personal experience. I haven't spoken to the Senate staff or Senator Parada or his staff. But I think that they're listening. I think that there is a need for structural change. Charlie Hoppen and I went through confirmation hearings with the Rules Committee 2 weeks ago Wednesday, and there was a discussion at the hearing of this, not so much of Senator Parada's bill, but of the question of structural change for the water board systems. And both Charlie and I said that we believe that some amount of structural change, you know, the right types and some amount of structural change would be beneficial to the system. I think of our system as sort of an eight-cylinder car that has got a couple of spark plugs that are fouled. You know, we don't run as smoothly as we could. We don't, you know, have the power that we could. We're not quite as effective as we could be. We do a lot of good work. I don't want to, you know, to run the system down or diminish the system, but there are certainly some improvements that could be had. And the structural dimension is one dimension. Another dimension is our internal management, and we're working on a re-engineering, both internal to State Board, and we hope it'll reach out into the regions. So, for example, on recycled water policy, they're actively assembling a water policy team, cross-regional team. So the policy will emanate from a cross-regional team rather than emanating from State Board staff. And regional board staff will be on the outside commenting as if regional board staff are the same as any external stakeholder. That's how policy has been developed historically. And I don't see any reason why it should be that way or needs to be that way. We can do better than that. So we're looking at structural change, we're looking at re-engineering, and, of course, resources or additional resource needs, which we need to sort through. And I think Senator Parada was trying to hit at all of those with his bill. And I don't think, again, I haven't spoken with him or his staff, but I don't think it was their intention to jam something through. I think it was their intention to stimulate conversation and to make it clear that this is serious and that the President Pro Tem of the Senate takes it seriously. And I think that message has gotten through, and that's good. And I think the general attitude around the State Board is that we need time for our strategic planning process and us, all of the board members through the WQCC, to weigh in on what types of improvements would make sense structurally so we can make a recommendation rather than just responding to other people. We had a discussion about this at the Water Quality Coordinating Committee last fall, I believe it was. Were any of you there? I'm drawing a blank. We had a discussion on that, and the point I made at the time was we need to get people to recognize we're players. You know, these discussions have gone on for the last few years, and the water board system itself has been silent. Well, we should speak up and either say everything is fine the way it is, if we really believe that. I personally don't. Or some changes would make sense, and here's the kind of changes that would make sense. And so I believe what Tam is trying to get across is that we need the bill to be a two-year bill. We need some time internally to come up with our own recommendations and to be proactive as opposed to reactive. And I do believe that message will be heard. I think that's where it will go, although, again, that's a little bit of tea reading on my part because I haven't spoken directly with his staff.
You know, Gary, I was listening to the first part of what you were saying about the differences in regions and
yes.
How it might be, I think you used the word difficult for a company.
For a company or a stakeholder to understand why or to deal with it.
Yeah, and... Mm-hmm. You know, that to me kind of just barely scratches the surface of what's there. And,
right.
And I don't know what's really going on. I would love to know what really the impetus is for this, you know, effort. And maybe your research analyst work is going to, you know, bring all of this to light. But, you know, is something really difficult or are there just different standards? And there are different standards throughout counties. You know, between states. I mean, all over the place. And just because, mm-hmm. you know, the regional mm-hmm. boards mm-hmm. are essentially an agency mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. does something a little bit differently, you know, throughout the state, I don't know that that is necessarily bad.
Yeah.
I tend to not like mm-hmm. a too centralized government.
Right.
Myself, that's a personal right. observation.
Right.
I think you... given human nature, when you have things uh-huh. kind of broken down, that you foster creativity, innovation,
mm-hmm.
and you get people closer to where the problems are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just naturally creates mm-hmm. Differences. So I'd like to know more.
Sure.
And really, I'd like to know specifically what's going on and what we could address. You know, if there are things going on, and I don't know if there's anything going on in our region that anyone is critical of.
I have not heard any particular story involving your region. But I'll give you an example that I'm going to explore this afternoon with staff, once through cooling. We now have the federal rules have been remanded to EPA for revision, and it'll take them years probably to do that. So the water board system is going to, you know, be reissuing NPDES permits for once through cooling to, I think it's 21 power plants. On the coast, they're going to be in five different regions, and each region may exercise its best professional judgment in different ways for different plants. And if you're a power company with plants in multiple regions and the rules are different in the different regions, that's going to be difficult.
Well, but
so, we just need to sort that out. Are those difficulties justified? Is it each plant is a different plant? It has a different part of the ocean which is being affected, and so it's justified. The differences are justified.
Right.
Or are the differences driven by personality, which we have sometimes? I'll give you a personality example on a different topic if you want.
Okay, but not yet. My question is, why is it difficult? I mean, just because you have differences, and you've got corporations
with
tremendous resources
that
deal with things in different states, they've got staff that can deal with different requirements. So I don't know that it's necessarily difficult just because it's different.
Well, I guess it's a matter of difficult with a small d or a big d, and what your threshold is for differences. I mean, it's a little bit of a personal thing. I mean, for myself, I was a consulting engineer for 10 years from about mid-80s to mid-90s. And during that time period, I did assist on a few occasions with people dealing with the water board system. And I never worked on a compliance schedule project, but let's take that as an example since I mentioned it earlier. Suppose someone wants to know, a treatment plant operator wants to know whether they can get a compliance schedule for certain discharge parameters associated with that they're going to do better on associated with a plant upgrade. But they don't really know the rules. They're not expert in the rules. They're operational people. Suppose it's a small community. They go off and they need to find out what the rules are and try to comply with those rules. If they can understand the rules directly, they don't have to pay consultants so much. Maybe they'll pay a design engineer to design the expansion, but they can do the permitting themselves. So they can come in and talk to the regional board and get their permit. If the rules are different from region to region, when they go to the Association of Sanitation Agencies meeting and they're trying to understand the rules and they're talking to people, they'll get told things that aren't true for their region. They'll get told what the rules are in someone else's region where that person's operating. And then they'll think that's what the rules are until they hear otherwise from someone else in their region or from their regional board staff, and they won't know why that is, and maybe it'll get a little muddied in the communication. You get a lot of runaround that way. It's not intentional, but you get a lot of wasted effort. When does that wasted effort rise to the level where it's unacceptable? That's a tough decision. That's what I mean by small d or big d with difficulties. But it's out there. And, I think that if you can justify the differences, not you, but if one can justify the differences, then okay, the rules are different. There's a reason for it. But if there's no reason for the differences other than the fact we have a decentralized system that, hasn't communicated well enough, that's not a good reason, I don't think. I think it creates a burden. And I'll give you a more profound difference. Orange County is split between two regions, San Diego and Santa Ana. Santa Ana region has said with respect to management of non-point source pollution that you don't need to control all your hydromodification impacts on site, on the property itself when you do a development project. You can control it with some ponds downstream or in a regional way. Regional solutions are okay. Both source measures and regional measures are okay. In the San Diego region, the attitude has been pretty much you have to control it on site. You need to, if you're going to cause hydromodification impacts or sediment's going to move, you need to deal with it on your property. Once it leaves your property, that's, we're not going to allow you to deal with that regionally. I don't know why that difference exists. The conversations I've had with staff people about it, as best I can tell, it's a difference of opinion. Different professionals have different opinions. Just as two different lawyers might have different opinions on a legal matter, two different engineers might have an opinion on an engineering matter. We have two different professional staff in two different regions with two different opinions. And from my perspective, that's a difficulty for Orange County, a real difficulty, and not one that I can just say, hey, differences are okay. I mean, they're a county. They have they have ordinances. They're countywide. They're supposed to have two parts to their ordinance, one part for one, that's in one region, one part in another. It's complicated. If it's necessary because the watersheds are different, that's fine. If the watersheds are different, and it's not necessary, and we as a board system, I think it's incumbent upon us to decide, is source protection better and therefore we're going to emphasize it in all our regions, or is it okay to have regional solutions sometimes, as in Santa Ana, and then San Diego would have to lighten up on that and allow it sometimes. I think it's incumbent on us as a board system to work that out. I strongly support the regional system. I strongly support the concepts or the points you made about innovation in the regions. I think it's going to be very interesting in a few years to see how the Central Valley waiver program plays out versus the Central Coast ag waiver program. But in the worldview you were describing, we should then say if one model is better than the other, one model works better than the other, we should then carry that success over into the other regions. And as a water board system, we don't do that very often. We talk about the power of innovation, and one region can do it differently, and we'll see what works best. But we're not very good at then turning around and saying, oh, but these eight regions didn't have the best model. This one did. Let's make it statewide. We don't do that very well, and we ought to. So this integration between the regions, when it makes sense, when we have a success story and we can build on it, we should do that. And looping back to recycled water, in the Bay Area, there's a general waste discharge requirement for recycled water systems, for irrigation systems. Seems to work well. I haven't heard anyone complain about it. I've asked our staff to look at whether that could be made into a statewide permit, and that would address the incidental runoff problem with recycled water systems that people are facing in some regions, and the staff is going to look at it. And if we go statewide with that, I don't think in any way it diminishes the regional system. In fact, it shows the regional system innovated, found a good way to do things, and then spread it around. And I don't think if there's any political tinge to your question, who's driving this? I do think that there was a drive to create a uniform system at one time under Governor Wilson, and then a couple years ago under Governor Schwarzenegger through the California Performance Review, eliminate the board system and have a department. And consistency was one of the rationales put forward. I don't think there's any secret drive toward creating a department that's going on now. I think the consistency issue is just an issue that's been around. It has a certain amount of truth. We need to deal with the part of it that is true. And when we need to be different, we need to make it clear to people why. Make it transparent. We are different, and here's why, and it makes sense.
Dr. Perez.
I guess the fear from the regions is that the effort for consistency will provoke a race of laxity between different the last thing that we want is to put a lot of effort into, for example, one through cooling,
yes,
and then having the state say, well, there's one of the other regions came up with a different way to do it, and you're going to take that approach.
Right.
We in the region like to think of ourselves as being very innovative, especially protective of environmental, a wide range of environmental considerations. I think the fear is that our wings would be clipped.
Yes.
That sort of takes the wind out of any of our our efforts. So why do it if you're going to then have it kind of the most common denominator be the that's the fear.
I think it's a valid fear. Lowest common denominator is a valid fear. But I think there are ways to address that. My personal attitude expressed in my testimony to the Senate is that when there is an overriding state interest, and it is very clear there's an overriding state interest, so recycled water for me is an example of that, the state board should intervene in a very clear, specific, short way to say these are the rules statewide on a dimension of recycled water. Actually, it's the drinking water dimension that's most critical. And override the regions, and people won't like that at times. But I think when there's a clear and present overriding state interest, we need to do that. In all other situations, we need to be very deferential to the regions. I abstained on a TMDL that I voted on at the state board that I opposed at the regional level. I abstained on it because I said, my colleagues at the regional level thought it was okay. There's no overriding state interest. Doesn't matter how I would personally vote. It's not my job to revisit every decision of every regional board around the state. I can't do that. There's no way. I wouldn't do the job that you'll do. So only when there's a clear overriding state interest do I think the state should intervene. But then I think the state should intervene. We have a 108-page non-point source policy. I think it's 108. It's over 100-page non-point source policy. The guts of it comes down to five items. There are five key elements every non-point source regulatory mechanism, waiver, or order has to include. And those five are a little fuzzy. Why are we doing that? We ought to have a five-page, paper or policy that says, when it comes to non-point source, these are the things that represent the statewide interest. Everyone has to do them that way. And everything beyond that, everything outside of that, is open. We'll be deferential to the regions. I think we can do that. I think there are a very limited number of things on which, on a statewide level, we need uniformity and consistency. And there are a large number of things on which regional differences are fine and good. And we just need to sort that out a little bit.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. I just was going to share something with you. I practice law in the other part of my life. And we have like some 50-plus counties in California.
Yes.
And the Superior Court system is all kind of one agency. But you know that there are separate rules for each county.
Uh-huh.
And they're all different.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they have differences.
Right.
And I practice maybe in five or six counties in Southern California.
Uh-huh.
I got a different set of rules for each of them.
Right.
It just is. I mean, but it's one agency. And, some things make sense, some things don't.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, no one's had to explain to me, why that is. It just is. But not to diminish your comments, I think where there are benefits to be drawn,
mm-hmm.
that can be more institutionalized,
right,
across the regional boards, I think that would be beneficial.
Right.
But I'd love to see what work the research analyst comes up with in terms of.
Well, the research project's not about. It's about,
okay,
the white paper is about property value.
Okay. I misunderstood.
Yeah.
Is there some effort to further look at specifically what's going on that can be?
Well, the strategic planning process is supposed to be doing that,
okay,
you're involved with. And
okay,
then there is this particular subset that I initiated with respect to non-point source,
okay,
the table that I was mentioning.
Okay.
In other areas, I don't think there is an organized effort to try to figure that out. I would say in recycled water, I've personally been trying to figure it out. I'm hopeful that in Once Through Cooling, we'll be able to get an effort up and underway to try to figure out how to handle this remand in a way that is orderly and yet not driven by personalities.
Gary, separately, can you tell us about AB 885?
That's
heard,
septics?
Yeah,
septics,
somehow
yeah.
I've heard that the regulations will not apply to existing systems.
Oh,
that it's
okay,
really going to be more proactive.
Well, let me try to speak to that in a minute. But I just want to make a quick comment. I think we're more or less on the same page with respect to this issue of appropriate and inappropriate consistencies. Maybe we have somewhat different wording, but I think
right,
we're very much on the same page. You know, your statement that the inconsistencies, they just are, I agree with that completely.
Yeah.
And even further, not only are they just are, but they're going to continue to be. There's no question of that.
Right.
All right. The question is whether we can come up with a mechanism to sort them out and find the ones that are the biggest thorns in people's sides, where there's the biggest gain from regularizing things, standardizing things, and then do that. Okay. But there's still going to be a lot of differences.
And that's for the state board to do. I mean, the state board
that,
who sits on top of all of us and
that,
who has that ability to peer down.
Right.
And see what are the common threads,
right,
what are the common issues and problems,
right,
and who's got some good solutions to them. You guys should be doing that.
I hope that we are doing that and we'll be doing it better.
Right, okay.
Okay, now back to septics. I have not read the most recent version of the draft regs it was posted on the website a
right,
couple of weeks ago.
Right.
So you believe that existing septics will be exempt? Is that what you had heard?
I believe so. Lori, do you have any?
That doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
My recollection is that there were going to be design standards for new septics and perhaps alternative systems required in certain circumstances for new septics, but that existing septics were going to be required to do something like pump out the tank every 5 years, measure the level of solids once a year. There might have been a groundwater monitoring provision. I don't remember
okay,
the details, but I believe those sorts of requirements are in there now and are still in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Briggs.
You were wondering about examples of inconsistency that may not be acceptable inconsistencies. And you, Gary, you mentioned the NPDS permit time schedule, and that
yeah.
some of the regions don't have that in our basin plan. We're one of the regions that does not have that in our basin plan,
uh-huh.
something we wanted to do. It's not really that difficult of an issue,
mm-hmm.
but the basin plan is a cumbersome beast
right.
to make any kind of an amendment to. And I think that's an example where the state board can be of great assistance by going mm-hmm. ahead and coming up with a statewide policy, and we've got it done.
Right.
I think with our ag waiver regulation of irrigated ag, I think we have a very well documented process in terms of how we got to where we are, and I think that will provide plenty of transparency for anyone who wants to look at why we're doing what we're doing
mm-hmm.
and how it may
mm-hmm.
differ from
mm-hmm.
other regions in terms
mm-hmm.
of what's best. I think the
right.
proof will be in the pudding in terms of the progress that we make.
That's right.
And I think we're making really good progress. And in the stormwater program, I think there is some room for some state assistance as far as consistency. You mentioned that municipalities that might go to a statewide conference and hear about differences, that it might be a little difficult to deal with and confusing. And you have a petition in your lap right now that could provide the state board an opportunity to
right.
provide some statewide guidance. But we are hopeful that,
exactly.
that as Dr. Press said, we don't end up with the yeah. lowest common denominator as a result
right.
of that process.
Right.
And as far as low-impact development, you mentioned this this white paper
mm-hmm.
and the investigation of how property values might be enhanced through low-impact development. We had a day-long conference on low-impact development a couple of years ago, and Donette Dunaway in the back there was our lead person in putting that together. And we had a great assemblage of folks with a lot of terrific information. There was a group from Seattle, which you may have heard from or
mm-hmm.
be familiar with, and in particular, one of their pilot project areas was C Street, I believe was the name of the street, where they put in a sinuous street instead of a straight street, and
right.
they have vegetated swale areas along the side. And one of the things they talked about was the increase in property values. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know how well documented that is, but it's the information is probably there.
Right.
So we want to make sure right. that your researchers take a look at that. Information.
I saw Bob Langwell, who's the research coordinator, in the hallway. Maybe it was last week. And he sent out a request for information to all the regions. Because we have a number of people in the regions who are very knowledgeable on this. LA region also held a workshop. I think they've held it more than once and have had some national and international experts come in. And so Bob was trying to gather together what was known, you know, from the different regions. And he said the response had not been what he thought it would be. And I'm just curious. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Was it Dawn?
Donette.
Donette? Did you get an email from Bob Langwell?
I don't call that email,
no. All right. Well, see, this is our system at work. You know, we need somehow to make those connections. Bob was trying to find the people in the regions who knew what they knew about low impact development, and to gather that information together, gather case studies together related to property value. Apparently, you're aware of at least one, and he's not getting the information to the right people or from the right people quite yet, and it will get there. But it's an example, you know, of this is the interior management one that I was mentioning earlier. We can do a better job inside our system of somehow facilitating those communications. So if I can get your card before I leave.
And Jennifer also.
Jennifer is here. Okay.
I did get that email. And
oh, good.
He was requesting case studies. And so it wasn't really clear that he wanted all information about low impact development.
Right. You did send him case studies. Ah, okay, great. All right. Success.
Okay, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay.